There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. Couple hours of live local talk. You and I, phone number, text line to get in touch with us, 343-0106. Of course, you use the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app, and you can call, you can text, you can use the talk back feature to leave us a message. So remember, it's free. And it's waiting for you. So if you're Apple user, it's waiting on iTunes. If you're a Android Luddite like myself, you go to Google Play and just look for FM Talk 1065. So FMTALK, number one, number zero, number six, number five. Do not put a point between, I mean, do whatever you want. I was going to say free country. It's not as, it's a kind of free country. So you can put a point between the six and five, but you won't get the app. So just FMTALK number 1065. And look for that at iTunes or Google Play. You'll see our logo, download it. And yeah, so among the umpteen different things that the app does, three ways to easily get in touch. One button to call the station, another button you hit, and you can text us a message into the text line. And there's a microphone icon there at the bottom. You can hit that, leave us a voice message, sends it right here at the station, and we can play that back later. So check it out, the FM Talk 106.5 app. All right, coming up on today's show, hour number two, interesting discussion. Mark Shambo from the Alabama Deep Sea Fish and Rodeo is going to join us. Of course, we'll talk about the rodeo and Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament and all that stuff coming up very soon, and tickets on sale and all that. But he's bringing on a guest, Dr. Sean Powers with the Dauphin Island Sea Lab. And we've talked before about the collaborative effort between the Sea Lab and what they do for research and the world's largest multi-day fishing tournament, like as Guinness has said about the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, and what it means for science collection, how they work with each other. They're going to join me in hour number two of the show. And my leadoff batter and my buddy this hour, Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation, joins us now. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. If folks haven't gone to the Dauphin Island Sea Lab, they need to get on down there because it is pretty awesome. My boys love it, and they need to check it out.
Yeah, you know, and Cameron doesn't live here, but comes down and visits with us, and it's a big hit at my house too. The estuarium, that's a good, you're talking about a thing to do for a summer day. People say, "What am I going to do with the kids?" Go to the Sea Lab. It is cool.
Yeah, absolutely, and I mean, seem to believe that science is for liberals, and we should not surrender that ground. That is not a thing we should.
No, that's for sure. All right, a lot to talk about. I want to talk about your feature, and people can check it out over at AL.com, your rhyme about repeal and replace. But before that, you and I were just during the news there while I was running at the beginning of the hour. I was just kind of getting your opinion on. So we have President Biden has come out and said that the remain in Mexico policy is gone, and now it's a come on back. But I'm missing something here, maybe, because these are people that had closed cases. So there's already been a decision. I mean, the story here, Yahoo says the administration on Wednesday will begin to allow the first of thousands with closed cases to pursue their asylum claims within the United States, according to DHS. More than 30,000 migrants could be potentially eligible, according to government data. So these are people that have been told before they didn't fit the definition of asylum, right? But now President Biden's saying, well, y'all come on back and try again.
Yeah, that's my understanding of the situation. And the difference is, it's one thing to try outside of the country, and it's another thing entirely to come into the country and say, we'll try it here. I mean, this is another recipe for disaster from an administration that's proven incapable of dealing with the immigration issues along the border. They were difficult. This is like President Trump when he said about, ooh, it was this complicated. Democrats are really, really struggling with this. And this is mind blowing to me why we have a situation at the border that needs to be put under control. And we're moving more people in to adjudicate asylum cases on U.S. soil. That seems kind of bizarre.
I mean, this is the abdication of the legislative branch, right? I mean, that's why we've talked about this for other issues. This is done by the executive because, well, the legislative just doesn't want to do it. They have over time said, let somebody else deal with it, maybe the judicial or, in this case, the executive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can blame Trump, you can blame Biden, doesn't matter. The real problem is Congress. This is an issue. DACA is a great example. There were these immigrant children issues that President Obama just unilaterally said, I'm just going to kind of deal with this. And that created a big uproar. But the point was that it was an issue that needed to be addressed by Congress. It was very reasonable to address the issue. It's just that Congress fails again and again. And I'm beginning to think members of Congress just kind of enjoy it, that they like the failure so they could just blame it on one president or another and not actually have to do their jobs. And at this point, I mean, the particularly seated members of Congress right now should be ashamed that they failed so regularly on something that's so important.
Yeah, but the other problem is, number one, legislative branch abdicating their responsibility, kicking the can over to another branch. But number two, people on the front line, and you think about DHS, you think about ICE, you think about that's your job, man. And what the definition of your job is changing every 4 years of what's the rule of law? What is the law?
Well, and I think that's the central question, Sean. And that's the one that keeps coming up over and over again. We have immigration law that's not confusing. We apprehend. We know who's allowed in. We know who's not. It needs to be updated. The system is broken. I don't think it's unfair to say that. Some of the policies just don't really make any sense anymore, and Congress must engage. And the frontline workers are saying, well, hey, we're apprehending these folks. Are we going to enforce the law today or not, depending on the administration? And that kind of thing's bizarre because all your political people change with an administration, but the frontline people on the border don't. And so it's like getting whiplash guidance back and forth. And again, the issue is we won't do our job. We won't vote on things. We won't amend things. We're just going to sit here and be upset and go talk about it on Fox News.
Just joining us, talking to Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. So if you and I were going to wager here the chance of the legislative branch of Congress picking this up and giving some guidance, updating, revamping, reworking, whatever, what odds you give this of Congress doing it?
It's really low, and the reason why is simple. It's the same example of all the charities based around curing cancer. If you actually cure a cancer, all of their jobs and revenue stream dries up. Well, guess what? If you actually address immigration law in a competent, coherent way, it takes away a significant campaign issue for Democrats and Republicans. They like whining about it. They like saying that, hey, Democrats like casting Republicans as racist. Republicans like casting Democrats as not caring about law at all. And that's the issue here, is it's more of a political nyan-nyan back and forth than it is solving the actual problem. The solutions aren't that complicated. It's just that both sides would have to surrender a little ground. Both sides would get a win. And that, we're convinced that's bad.
But if they would get this one done, Cameron, if they would get this one, they're a creative bunch up there. You've worked up there. They can find another paper tiger, right? I mean, just get this one done. Let's get it figured out. Let a guy like me, you, or anybody have some basic understanding that the law is going to be the same no matter who's in the executive branch, and then go find some other thing to demagogue each other with and fundraise off.
Yeah, trust me, there's no limit to the number of things they can try to scare people about. And immigration is certainly one of them. And I agree. This takes leaders to step out and say, hey, you know what? We're going to give a little bit. And frankly, I was optimistic a little bit about President Biden thinking, okay, this guy, he bills himself as this sort of moderate Democrat. And he's been anything but. I mean, he has not been the deal broker. He has not brought everybody to the table and said, hey, look, nobody likes it, but the right answer is probably going to make everybody a little unhappy. He's said, dear progressive base, what do you want? And if we can't get it, we'll blame Republicans. So, you know, a pretty much a big failure for Joe Biden, who billed himself as, hey, I can bring people together. Trump couldn't do it. He's failing miserably on that accord.
Let's talk about another scenario here where the legislative branch in this case did something, but it's been really discussed and now discussed again and voted on in the judicial branch as the Supreme Court has given the third pass here to Obamacare, although I think semantically it's important to talk about what they did make the decision on in the Supreme Court this last week. Can you walk through that?
Yeah, it was a little bit unusual because the Supreme Court came out and said basically the states who had filed this last piece of litigation against the Affordable Care Act didn't have standing because they couldn't show how they were harmed by different provisions of the Affordable Care Act. That was basically the court's way of saying, like, this is over. We're not interested in talking about this anymore, because the court could have very easily gone the other way and said, hey, you do have standing to make the argument before the court, and we think that you got the right argument and the Affordable Care Act is dead. This is a go away, if there ever was one, from the Supreme Court related to the Affordable Care Act. And what I think people don't realize is that so many of the provisions that people hated, the individual mandate, for example, the Cadillac tax, the health insurance tax, the medical device tax, all those the individual mandate was zeroed out and the other ones were repealed. So really effective at removing different provisions of the Affordable Care Act and eliminating them from law. But there are other provisions of the Affordable Care Act, the Medicaid expansion, although not expanded in Alabama. The vast majority of states have expanded it. The protection for pre-existing conditions is wildly popular. So there are provisions of the Affordable Care Act that Republicans aren't going to repeal anyway. And so we're kind of in this uncomfortable repeal and repeal for so long that it's just become a mantra that we just say over and over again. But actually, Republicans have been pretty successful at repealing a lot of the stuff they didn't like.
All right, let's do this. Coming back from the break, more with you. Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. Discussion of his latest opinion column over at AL.com. Repeal and replace falls on its face. More of that when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right at 12:24, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, glad to have you all along. Good to talk to my buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. His latest opinion piece online at AL.com. Repeal and replace falls on its face. Okay, in this discussion of what the Supreme Court said in that 7-2 vote, it was this standing thing. We keep hearing about this. Obviously, you're an attorney. You've done this. You had the education. But standing, we hear everybody talk about standing. What is standing? I mean, if you had to just define it, what is standing?
So basically, you can ask the court to right a wrong. That you say, I am an aggrieved party. Something bad has happened to me, and therefore I have standing to file a case before the court to get the court to make it right. Well, if you haven't been injured or you haven't been harmed, and the court said, well, then you don't have standing to sue. For example, under normal circumstances, if, you know, you were injured, I wouldn't have the standing to sue somebody for injuring you. You could sue. You would have standing, but I would.
Okay.
And so when your audience hears standing, that's kind of what we're talking about.
Okay. And you talked about, as you look through Obamacare and these challenges that, you know, individual mandate, because that's what I, you know, that's what I'm interested in. That's the one part of it to me that is this linchpin. And I do believe it is a linchpin because you said, hey, pre-existing conditions, all these different things that Republicans had talked about before that they're now popular. That's fine, but they don't work unless, and once again, I'm against the government mandate. But without the government mandate to make people who don't need insurance buy insurance, the whole deck of cards, the whole house of cards falls down.
Yeah, and practically speaking, you're right. And we've seen premiums go up in the Affordable Care Act plans. I mean, we've in those exchange plans and things like that, we've seen what happens when that is enforceable. And so, yes, as a practical matter, it falls apart. As a legislative, or I should say legislative leftovers at this point, it's still on the books. And so that's, you know, that's one of those big issues that I think voters need to look at and say, okay, what's the practical impacts of this? I mean, is this actually working as intended, or is this not going to do it anymore? And if it's not going to do it anymore, we do have to come up with an option to deal with the realities as they exist. And that's uncomfortable for Republicans and Democrats, because Democrats say, hey, give everybody everything. But as we've seen lately, this notion of we're going to spend until we can't spend anymore, it's just not sustainable, even if it's politically popular.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, goes back to the question. I mean, if to argue it from the other side, go back and talk about what former President Obama was saying of why you have the, you know, we need people who are young and healthy to get in here to, you know, to be able to. All those other things that are nice and swell, they don't work unless you make people buy insurance who don't need anything from it right then. I mean,
you're not wrong, Sean. And I mean, this is the situation that we're in, is the practical realities aren't what we're talking about. For example, if you gut all the tax revenues for the Affordable Care Act, then you're still expanding Medicaid. You're still paying for something, but you're not actually generating the revenues to pay for
it. Correct.
And so that's more deficit spending. That's just a math reality. It doesn't matter what I think about it politically. And same thing with the individual mandate. That was getting healthy bodies into insurance pools that didn't need the insurance, right? They objectively do not need the insurance because they're statistically going to be way healthier, but that's what the Affordable Care Act used to drive down premium costs. It is an effective way to do it. It's just a really raw deal for the people that don't need the insurance coverage.
Right. And but then, okay, you'd say, so of course they're not going to do it. And we talked about people that would rather just pay the, you know, pay the tax there. But now we eliminate that, and there's no coercive measure to put them into it, and we don't like, this whole thing is, it seems like we're talking about something ridiculous here, because there's no mechanism to pay for it other than deficit spending.
Right. And
government
spending. To be clear, it is ridiculous. It's quite ridiculous. It's where we find ourselves frequently in American politics at the federal and state level these days. But it's just having a frank conversation out about it outside of the partisan aspects of, hey, we don't want to force people to buy insurance. Okay, well, if you don't force them to, then we can't use this same mechanism to drive down premium costs.
Right.
Okay, so we got to figure out something else. Let's have that conversation. There are options. I mean, you can have different association health plans. You can change health savings accounts and make them a lot more open for folks to use. It's not like there's not good ideas from a policy perspective, but we're stuck on repeal and replace or no. And that's not very useful.
All right. Remind folks how to find you online. Read more about this and other works, other opinion pieces.
You can find me at D. Cameron Smith on Twitter, Facebook. I'm the good-looking Cameron Smith. Or, you know, send smoke signals. I like the conversation anyway. I can get it.
All right, brother. Good to hear from you. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you, Sean.
There he is, Cameron Smith. And we're coming right back. More of this Midday Mobile thing. We got lots to get. The lion's share of the show still on the way.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Any junk at your house? We talk about junk like in your house, up in the attic. You know, if you would rather not go up that, whatever you call it, it's like it's stairs, but it's a ladder. It's that thing that folds out of the ceiling there, and you got stuff needs gone. They'll go up there and get it for you, but it could be big things in the backyard, a swing set. It could be a storage shed, anything, contents inside. They can get that as well as something maybe like at a storage unit you pay on every month. You don't even know what you got there. Get rid of the junk and let my buddy Trey do this. He's been doing it 13 years in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Big national company, but a friend of mine that runs this operation. Good guy. And he and his crew will make an appointment with you. And that's a lovely thing, too. Not like one of those spectrums of time. They will, when you go to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK, they'll find a day that works for you and be like, oh, Friday? Yeah, Friday works for me. A window of time that works for you. And then they show up then. It's refreshing. They quote you a price on the job. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or just pick up the phone and call them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, a text coming in here. Other than, should I read Jason's? I'm going to read this, Jason, because this is a public service. He said that our news partners at WKRG just reported a massive sewage overflow between Chin Street and Butt Street. Breaking news there. But also, in my phone's going off with text here, people questioning me on my take on the Affordable Care Act and the question not answered at by the Supreme Court last week. And my friend Jeff Bohr was just trying to get out of work, and I grabbed him and pulled him back into the studio to talk more about this. This idea, it's like the transmission is out of this thing with the no individual mandate. I don't want the individual mandate, but with that, what are we pretending that's going to go on here?
I still think a lot of people are they want to do away with Obamacare because of the imbalance it has brought to the health insurance market, I think. And it's just an avenue to challenge it, the whole law, so then you could get to a new place and start from scratch. Right. Whereas if you don't have that component of the court taking it away, there's no incentive, there's no reason, there's no justification to have a discussion about, okay, what are we going to do about health care in this country?
Yeah, so it seems like it depends on how long Democrats are in the White House and Democrats have control in Congress. But I think they're setting up their own question. They're going to say, well, without the mandate, people like all these things, right? No ban on pre-existing conditions. Let's go down the litany of things that people like. So without this individual mandate, the funding is just not there because those dang kids are not
Paying their way in.
They're not signing up to pay for, grandpa or mom and dad. Because we care and we're a kind country, we're going to. So it's to me, it's what I'm dancing around, but it's single payer. People were saying, well, Obamacare was a stepping stone to single payer. But this is like, it is, but it's like a backdoor way to it.
As I say, it disrupted the status quo enough to where people will say, this isn't working. We need to just overhaul it and make the system more fair. Look, when England nationalized their healthcare, they didn't have this weird transition phase we're going through right now.
Right.
They didn't have, the day before they had health insurance or you paid out of pocket, and then they didn't have this transition. You woke up the next day and, oh, the government runs the healthcare system now. Well, we have done the only in America where we have these corporate interests with these big health insurance providers.
Yeah, who tried to sit there and write them.
And tried to balance it with the push toward this just government one-size-fits-all socialist approach that we could create such a Frankenstein of a system. I guess the original sin, Sean, but it goes back to what FDR, and he put the wage controls on everything, and people are looking for back doors. The market was demanding that, and guess what? The new benefit of health insurance was invented, and that's where we are today.
Yeah, well, you set that up. And then you let it break itself or break it. And then, of course, you come in and fix it. And that fixing is going to be more government. in it, because there's no way there's out of the trap that it is in now, there's not a private sector solution to it, because it just makes no sense. I mean, there's, you have people that aren't, that don't have to get into it, don't have to pay. So you got people that need it, using it, but you don't have a funding mechanism to you know, to offset. So like you said, premiums go up. They're going to get to a certain point. They're unaffordable. It's going to be, it's going to be such an easy campaign platform plank to say, working, hardworking American families, right? I mean, here's my
thing. Have you dealt with our healthcare system? Have you spent time in a hospital, and were they nickel and dime you? I mean, the system is incentivized to charge you $5 for an aspirin or something. Mm-hmm. That's not really true to the American DNA, that we create a market system like that. But neither is going whole hog socialism. That's not really the idea.
But is there a middle ground? Because you that's what we're looking at now.
What if we just didn't have health insurance, and you just went to the doctor and you paid what the market value? That's feasible.
What about pre-existing conditions? You can tell somebody that they can't get insurance because they. I mean, this is the tough.
Why have health insurance if you've got cancer and you need treatment for cancer? Then, you know, so whatever the market, you know, I know you can't necessarily do healthcare like that because it's such a vital thing. But these are like the hard discussions, these ethical discussions you got to have about what do you want to perceive healthcare as in America? Is it a right? Do we need to have that discussion, or is it something? Is it a luxury, or is it a, you know, is it something that we could do without? And we have those. If we could have those discussions and have them in an honest way, where they're not demagogue, but we're never going to do that, then maybe we could figure out a system for something that's a vital and necessary service. But the perverse incentive structure that exists now makes it, you know, it's not a true market system.
No, it's not even close. And you have a system here that is set to fail right now. It's going to fail. There's not the money in it. So who is going to come in and rescue it? They're not going to undo popular provisions. So the only way I see that they deal with this is they're going to come in and fund it through government. And they're going to say, like you talked about, is it a right? We had that discussion round and round, right, when this first came up. Other than jury trial, and I think that's an exception worth discussing, what other right do you have that can take from my time or money? Is there a right that, you know, you have as Jeff, your freedom of speech doesn't cost me any money, right? Your Second Amendment rights don't cut me. There's no right that you have other than jury trial that take, except for if you say healthcare or health insurance, whatever you want to call it, because that's going to require my money. It's also going to compel doctors and nurses to work, because if it's a right, I can go to the doctor's house. He's like, I'm sleeping right now. I'm on vacation. I got a right to healthcare.
What if we did it like we do schools? You have school districts, public schools. Yeah, private schools. Mm-hmm. If you want to send your kid to private school, you can send your kid to private school, or you can send them to public school.
But so you have to, will the Americans bear that? Because to send my children to private school, I pay property taxes to pay for public school, and I don't put my children in public school. So will I have
but
to pay
at least you
some
have
kind
that
of
option?
So where will the money come from, though? Will it be coming out of property tax, or will it be coming out of somewhere that takes from some broader area, right? Like you said, here's a district. So everybody inside this district pays in X amount for public health insurance. And then if you choose to get private on top of it, then you would do it that way.
I mean, like having community hospitals, and I don't know if we were able to figure out a way to localize it a little more. And that way, you know, in a lot of places where they have socialized medicine, you can't compete against the government. That's illegal.
Right.
I don't want that. I want to at least have the option. If the government's not getting the job done, I want to at least have the ability to take matters into my own hands and be able to take my family or myself to a place that I think I could get the care that I need. But I don't want to have to wait on a 7-year list for a knee replacement surgery like they do in Canada.
Right.
That we need to have multiple options. And the closest thing I can think of is public education in America.
No, it's actually probably a good analog there. But once again, how do you fund it? Do you fund it? Because you said, and you're talking about in districts, so we're not funding it then from the federal government. It's going to come from a state level.
We fund schools from the federal government.
We have grant money comes to it, but we appropriate the base money for that district.
But you could approach it in a similar way. It depends on what the community wants to have and where they want to prioritize their community hospital, their medical district, their hospital district, and
each district have its own hospital?
Maybe they share it with another district, but I mean, you leave it up to communities to make these decisions and you localize it. And if it's a really young community that doesn't think they need a bunch of health care, then they have one kind of system. If it's the villages in Florida, yeah, an elderly, then you have
you
a different
afford,
system.
Yeah, how are you going to afford it? And everybody's going to pile in once they make that more robust in that district.
Well, then they just
people
have to pay.
People that need health care.
It's what you're willing to pay as a tax structure, right? That, you know, well, they have a 5% health care tax versus a 4% health care tax. The money's going to come from somewhere. Will it come from me, the individual? Will it come from your federal government taxes or local taxes? All that is fungible.
There we go. That's Jeff Poore. Appreciate you stopping in.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile. Yeah.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Remember the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app waiting for you over at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store. Free to download. Just search for FM Talk 106.5. Don't put a decimal point. Don't put the point between the 6 and 5. I don't know why, but it messes up the... So just FM Talk 106.5, and that's a brand new app, and you'll download it, and then we'll talk about it. Speaking of talking, I'm going to check in with my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM Motor Cars. And Larry, we get to talk trucks, man.
Absolutely. We got a couple fresh ones we want to talk about. We just got in a 2017 Dodge Ram Hemi crew cab, four-wheel drive, leather interior, big horn edition, beautiful truck. Then we get in a 2016 2500 diesel, four-wheel drive, crew cab. Just put a brand-new set of tires on it, decided he wanted to trade up, so it's all sitting here ready to go.
Four-wheel drive diesels, man, those are unicorns as well. Those are hard to find.
Yes, sir, and this one is in that $35,000 range, which we got a lot of people looking to spend $35,000 on a four-wheel drive diesel, so we got one. We haven't had a chance to detail it yet, but that will be done shortly.
All right, somebody wants to run out and call dibs on that one. Give them directions to come see you.
Highway 90 and Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM Motor Cars. And a lot of text here coming in. This one text, as Jeff is probably, this will time this right, he's probably in his, walk out of the lobby here, heading out, he's probably in the car now. Supermom says, aspirins don't cost $5, Jeff. They cost $1.35. Still, it's beyond ridiculous. Each? Tim says, that's your whole problem right now. You support people with health care that never pay their fair share and never will. What are you going to do in areas where there's urban blight and there's no tax revenue to support a hospital? You can't hardly support the hospital with EBT cards. So that is just Jeff's question there. But I just get back to the main point, and I am, you can go back and check the record, I am no fan of what I believe is unconstitutional with the individual mandate. But there's no, so what are we looking at here? If you say, okay, there's no way to compel people who don't need insurance to buy insurance. Because that's the whole racket, right? That's the whole deal. Even though I think it's smart, even if you think you're very healthy and young, I would suggest to you, this is not government mandate, this is just me talking to you, get insurance. You never know what can happen. I get so many stories and anecdotal, but get insurance. But that's the play, right? Let's get people who don't need insurance to pay for insurance to help people who need insurance who can't afford the full freight of that insurance. So you take that away, and there's all these popular parts of it. And I said through the whole discussion, when they were talking about the Affordable Care Act. All these things that they were laying out, like benefits to people on this, I think they're all great ideas. I don't think it's a job of government to mandate them. But do I want protection for somebody who has a pre-existing condition to still be able to get insurance? You darn right I do. So many parts of it that I support, but I couldn't. The formula here of government mandating you do this, it just was to me. Of course, I'm not on the Supreme Court. Was unconstitutional. Ask Justice Roberts on that. But now you take that away. We're just we're pretending that we're playing imagining. We're like when we were kids, right? You imagine you're in the big box that the refrigerator came in, and you're like, "Yeah, man, this is like the Millennium Falcon." It's not. It's a cardboard box, and that's what we're looking at here. If there is no mechanism to compel people to pay for the insurance of others, then the premiums will go so high that people won't be able to pay them. Then what will happen? Well, politically, it'll put you in a position where you just say, well, I'll tell you what, you'll hear this too. Hard-working Americans, you're talking about the cliche, I like it, we'll hear this in every political season. Hard-working Americans, hard-working Alabamians, everybody hard-working. Well, I just saw a bunch of people went up. We had to go run an errand here earlier. They were out walking the streets that did not look hardworking. But hardworking Americans are X, Y, and Z, and they can't afford health insurance because of, you know, failures of the Republicans. They'll go down the list, and then they'll say, but we believe you deserve the health care, this level of health care, so we're going to step in and pay for. And this is how you get to single payer. People thought it would look differently, but I think it's dressed like this. All right. And it's the word is won't, Ricky, W-O-N apostrophe T. But I read Ricky E's. He said, it won't matter, Sean, but you did get my name right. I appreciate it. Because the kill shot will kill 150 million people by the end of the next year. Okay. 150 million. Americans, Ricky, or where specifically? Now, what happens there? You're saying that that's a good thing because it brings down the number of people that we have to insure? Are you making that play here that that's a better? Texter says insurance isn't the only problem. The costs are just too darn high. Right, because there's a, like Jeff said, to quote him, a perverse incentive, right? We've said that before, to have things cost more than they should. Because it's not the medical field, they don't get to operate in a free marketplace. So they operate in this perverse system that has $1.35 aspirin and nickel and dime for this and that. Is there a third way? Because I mean, there were failures before. The reason there was traction for the Affordable Care Act is they weren't doing a good job. Don't you agree? Do you think that health insurance was beyond reproach when then first term President Obama brought the Affordable Care Act up? No. The traction, the grip for that was a statement on problems that already existed in the system. But talk about out of the frying pan and into the fire. At the same time, at least through my eyes, violating my understanding of the Constitution. Now, Supreme Court majority thought differently, but so Joe says health care and health insurance are criminals robbing us right in front of our eyes. I think the system is doing that, Joe. I think there's perverse incentives, which is the name of my new wave tribute band that I want to form at some point. Do a lot of Duran Duran and do some Men at Work. We're working up our set list. I'll get you that. Hey, coming up, Mark Chambeau from the Alabama D.C. Fish and Rodeo and Dr. Sean Powers from the Dolphin Island Sea Lab are both going to be in here. Lots to talk about. in the relationship between the rodeo and the C-Lab. That discussion coming your way next.